This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Hour number five of the G-Bag Nation, the Power Hour. Wolchuk, Chiafalo, Broadus. We got a Lucius with you. Carter Freeman running your video. Gavin Dawson, he's coaching. He's trying to coach his soccer team to a dub. Let's hope that it ends up happening for him. We got Mike Golick Jr., Gojo, our buddy, who's going to join us in just a minute. We'll talk some football with him. College football, great with that. He's actually, I just saw a video talked about Texas A&M. Have they got a resume now that is good enough for the college football playoff committee?
Sure, I think it is.
Anybody who wins the SEC, obviously, you're an automatic.
Yeah.
If they were to lose, say, to Texas at the end of the year, maybe if they drop that an would be unexpected their
only,
one.
That would be their only conference loss if they lose to Texas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess
they assuming they don't lose
South Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't think they lose.
A night
lose.
Game versus so. The Gamecocks, dude?
I don't think so either.
Is that thing in, is it in Columbia?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe it's okay. In Columbia.
See, South Carolina's played teams tough. They should have beat Alabama.
They should.
Had Alabama on the ropes, but that was
6:30 kick.
Yeah, that's going to be a late kick. You know what? I would hate to be Texas A&M and have a letdown like that.
It's maybe, a perfect letdown opportunity for the Aggies.
Maybe A&M teams in the past have had, but I think Mike's with us.
All right, Gojo, how you doing, brother? We were just talking about A&M, and I know on DraftKings you guys were discussing the resume. What do you think about where the Aggies are right now, and is there any way they're not able to make the college football playoff at this point?
I mean, listen, I think part of the thing we have to admit going into the 12-team field is there's a lot we don't know about what the committee is going to value. Texas A&M's got the opportunity because they're in pole position in the SEC to make it real easy and just make and win the conference championship and call it a day, and it's fine. But, you know, South Carolina coming up is not going to be a slouch. That's a team that certainly has landmine capability with a quarterback like Lenora Sellers and what he can do, the defense there. They've got the matchup against Texas at the end of the year that, listen, that's a very good Texas team that could give them a second loss. And so any of those things could still be complicating factors, but I think especially if Marcel Reed's at the helm and the different element that he affords that offense, I think they've got a really good shot.
Yeah, I'm sure as a Notre Dame guy such as yourself, you're probably loving this Aggie run that's taking place right now. But looking on the other side of things with the Longhorns, what do you think is – I mean, they kind of eke by there versus Vandy. There's Ewers criticisms. I don't think their offensive line is performing all that well. That was supposed to be their backbone.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing. Like, don't get me wrong, Quinn in the couple of games back from injury hasn't looked quite like himself just yet. I thought he was playing some of the best quarterback in the country before he went down with that injury. And so it's taken him a little while to get back comfortable in there. But I'm with you. The offensive line really struggled going back to that game against that Georgia defense. Although I think the wide receiver core, and quite honestly, the play calling even struggled. Kirby Smart and that defense were a step ahead of them at every turn. And so the Vanderbilt thing is interesting. Like, I think we do have to recalibrate a little bit of what it means to play a close game against Vanderbilt, because that's a good team right now. I mean, there's no other way to slice it. They've played good ball in the SEC. They've got the win over Bama to prove it. And so I do think that means something a little different. But the offensive line and that group led by Kelvin Banks was supposed to, I thought, be more of the hammer this year. They've still been a good unit, but I expected them to border on a great unit, and that might be where some of the discrepancy is and why some of these games are a little closer than we bargained for.
Hey, Mike, in our own backyard here in Dallas, the SMU-Pitt matchup, I'm kind of interested because I didn't think anybody had on their dance card that, yeah, let's have an undefeated Pitt team and an undefeated SMU team in the conference show up this late in the season.
Yeah, and you know what? It's unfortunate because it seems like injury could play a little bit of part in watering down some of the fun of this game. You know, Maryland, the great tight end for SMU, already lost for the season, unfortunately won't be in this game. And now there's questions about Eli Holstein, the quarterback for Pitt, and his potential availability as, you know, they're sort of keeping that one close to the vest. And so I hope that he's healthy so they can go in this one, because you're right, they've been two really great surprises. Pat Narduzzi, anytime real offense shows up on the south side, has to be a little bit uncomfortable, but we saw just how much when you pair an offense, and we saw this with Kenny Pickett years ago, with the defense that we know Pat Narduzzi's outfits play, it's always a really dangerous group. They thumped a Syracuse team led by a quarterback in Kyle McCord, who's pretty darn good. So I'm looking forward to that one. And listen, the ACC is kind of like a lot of these other Power Four conferences, where the committee is going to run into an interesting problem if these teams all keep staying undefeated, because a lot of the top end team, you know, SMU and Pitt are going to play, but they don't play Clemson. They don't play Miami, who are also at the top of the conference and don't play each other. And so there's some weird tiebreaker scenarios in a world without division that are getting ready to play out here as we head up to conference championship weekend.
Mike Golic, Jr. Gojo with us here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. The big one, Ohio State, Penn State. Is it a bummer that this one is a noon kick Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, and this is not the Penn State whiteout?
Yeah, I would say, listen, whiteout, I finally got to experience one of those a couple of years ago, and it was for Penn State, Minnesota. Minnesota was starting a backup quarterback in Ethan Kaliak-Manis at the time, and you knew it probably wasn't going to go well for them, but still the atmosphere is second to none in college football. So would have loved to have seen that been the treatment for a game of this caliber. I would just settle for, you know, healthy quarterback play. We know Drew Aller went out in the second half of their last game, and I want to see them out there at full strength so we don't have any excuses, because this is the game really for both teams. Ohio State had the test against Oregon, and that game was as advertised, a close game that one team eventually had to lose. Oregon's at home. You saw the home crowd affect some of the snap count stuff for Ohio State, so it all made sense. But for Penn State, this is the judgment game. We've looked at everything in their season as a preamble to this, because we even saw last year, hey, before you brought Andy Kotelnicki over and started to tinker with some things offensively and create some more explosives, they could pass and do things against the non-Michigan and Ohio State teams last year. And then they got in those games, they turtled on offense, and it all went to hell. And so I don't want there to be any excuses going into this weekend, because for James Franklin and this program that have been really good by everyone else's standards, but falling just below the top end of the Big Ten right now, this is a huge game and a great opportunity for them to try and break through.
Okay, we do want to transition to some NFL for you, but yesterday one of our co-hosts for the first time found out about this Mike Mangino intern towel poop story. Are you familiar with this?
I am not, no.
All right. Well,
good, because I was like,
Mic on.
Yeah. All right, this is good, because yesterday I was like, wow, this is a blind spot situation. Sorry, I was talking with my mic off there momentarily.
We all have these moments, Gojo.
Pretty fired up.
We're trying to be professional.
Broadus is rubbing off on me.
Trust me.
But yeah, the Mark Mangino allegation that apparently there was equipment staff members who were tasked every single day with being the ones to gather and discard. I guess clean his booty towels because he had to use towels to actually wipe himself. I guess he had to floss, sort of, if you know what I'm saying.
Rather large,
couldn't reach around.
No. Listen, we've all spent a night in a hotel with some towels we don't respect. I get it.
Yes.
Listen, it's a deep clean that very few other things can replicate. Now, I don't know about the notion, and listen, I even feel bad. It's not something I do now as an adult, but in my younger days when I had a little bit less awareness of other people, the thought of someone having to handle that on the staff is pretty wild. And one of those things that I'm sure makes you question if you're, you know, a staffer on there who's got aspiration of being in big-time football and being around the game, it's going to make you question how much you love it. That is pretty foul.
I like the use of aspiration there.
Do you question the love for the game.
Do you stay in the equipment business? I mean, maybe you were like a young, you know, equipment, you know, staffer, and now you're a head equipment guy somewhere. Do you kind of like?
No, that's when you throw in the towel.
When your guys start complaining, do you say, "Hey, listen, you don't know what I had to do. You guys don't have any clue what I had to do when I was your age," kind of a thing.
That is true. There's something to be said for having something to go to when the old conversations start, because we all hear it. You know, every generation's got their version of it. I had to hear for years from my dad about how, oh, your guys' training camp's not really tough. Back when we were in training camp, X, Y, and Z happened, and we all pulled switchblades on each other in 3 days where we had to practice with two sets of pads on. So having the poop towel in your back pocket for this, pun fully intended, probably a pretty good place to be when you're ready to go and throw it in someone's face.
Hey, Gojo, I was going to ask real quick. I know Zach talked about taking you in the NFL, but real quick, how much research have you had to do in your shows on Army football?
Man, I tell you what, a lot more than I expected going into the start of this season. Yeah. I mean, and people have to understand the structural disadvantages in the sport. It's not just that hey, you know, the portal is not really an option for the service academies.
Right.
And NIL is not an option for the service academies. But a couple of years ago when they changed the cut block rules in college football, where now you can only cut block on the line of scrimmage,
right,
you've got to be straight up ahead, like, it changed the game for how the triple could operate overall. And some of these academies, I mean, thought about doing away with it altogether, have incorporated more spread principles into it. So it was a big challenge put in front of them. There's no reason for them to succeed, and yet they do. So it's incredible.
What were your thoughts and takeaways from that Cowboys-Niners game Sunday night?
Man, it's one of those where the Cowboys are a really tough team and a really unfun team to analyze right now, because the flaws are so apparent in the areas of football that are most required. And I think especially have been reinforced lately. Like, run and stop the run used to be a cliche that even I'd push back on as a former offensive lineman, because the NFL had become a pace-based league and blah, 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 all that stuff happened. And then a couple of years ago, people decided, now we're going to go and run it up the middle again because everyone got lighter and smaller. And we've seen some teams make the adjustment, and Dallas just wasn't one of them. And so now if you're a team that has any ability to run the ball, and Lord knows the 49ers did right up the middle, no matter who's at running back with them, the Cowboys really have no ability to stop them right now. And, yeah, having Micah Parsons and getting other guys back on defense would certainly help, but those are still areas that were not a problem before. It was the interior and stuff that hasn't been addressed. It's been the shuffling and the health on the offensive line and the inability to run the ball with no one in the backfield, you know, that already hasn't been there or isn't too long in the tooth. And so their problems are so fundamental that it makes it really difficult in any game to go out there and see a pathway to success for them.
How would you grade the Trayvon Diggs, D's nuts usage to a local reporter after the game?
Yeah, no, you know what? Anytime you can slip that in. And listen, Trayvon, you know, probably in a private moment wants that whole interaction back. But that being said, D's nuts jokes are never not going to be funny to me. And so I'm unfortunately always going to be a bit of a toddler in that regard, even if I think ultimately, like, hey, man, like, this is – but, like, this is one of those things I saw people commenting. This is my generation of athletes and younger all grew up online. So, of course, the first thing he's going to do after a game is be on his phone, checking what's going on Twitter, and then responding accordingly. Like, that's how we're all wired from the generation that got online and got social media.
What is your thoughts on this Anthony Richardson deal, man? I mean, have you ever seen somebody as at the quarterback position tap out to come out of the game?
No, and you know what? And I heard Marshall Newhouse, who, you know, played over a decade in the NFL on the offensive line, talk about this. It is interesting in a day and age where, hey, we've got more quarterbacks that are shouldering more of a true run game load than ever before, operating like a running back would. Like, we don't bat an eye when running backs and receivers and DBs and D linemen all tap out and sub out all game long. I used to rant about this all the time. Offensive linemen don't get a break, and yet all these guys pass rushing against us seem to need a breather to go on the sideline and suck wind and drink water all the time. It's a disgrace, but Anthony Richardson going and doing it is sort of like a violation of the norms around the position. And I think his comments after the game are probably at the heart of it as much as anything, of him being so cavalier in the way that he described it. And my first thought was, there had to be some real hurt feelings in that locker room based on how that went for them to make this move, because that's the only way I can justify it. If this is them making the move out of panic because some of the stat lines in the football field don't look as great, I think that's short-sighted for what you always knew was going to be part of the Anthony Richardson experience. And so I think Shane Steichen, if this is a move about the locker room, hey, listen, you're not just there to develop the quarterback. You got 52 other guys looking at you, wondering if you're going to hold everybody accountable the way every coach preaches. And so I'm not surprised with this. I would hope and expect to see Anthony Richardson back on the field soon with a little bit of a new appreciation for the opportunity, but nonetheless, the opportunity to go out there and continue to get the reps he desperately needs.
It's Mike Golic Jr. with us here on The Fan. I always love your food reviews. Have you tried anything worth trying lately?
Oh, sweet Jesus, guys. I'm glad you asked. Let me go get him out of the pantry so I get the name right on this, because I want to make sure I give you guys accurate information. I don't know if you guys are big Trader Joe's fans or not.
Oh, love it. Yes, yes.
One of my friends handed me one of the most important boxes I think I'll ever receive in my life. It's the Trader Joe's Pumpkin Spice JoJo's. They're pumpkin sandwich cookies covered in a flavored coating, a yogurt-flavored coating with sea salt. It is like pumpkin pie became a cookie and then got doused in ice cream and then entered my mouth. It is so rich and decadent. You've got to like the pumpkin flavor to be into it, but I'm a huge pumpkin spice guy. These things are soft, rich. They've got a little crunch to them and are absolutely wonderful. I'm already halfway through the box and I show no signs of slowing down. So if you got the opportunity and you're feeling the spirit of the holidays, I would suggest going and checking it out.
Man, I think that the Food Network's missing an opportunity here. We need to get you and your dad a show similar to Triple D. Go on out, or maybe you just go to some, you know, like Trader Joe's or grocery stores. You're just trying new items. The way you described that cookie was outstanding.
10 out of 10. Yeah, it's a must try. They look delicious.
Tough, too, to try and talk with as much saliva as was building up, because I was holding them in my hand, looking at them, remembering how good it felt just minutes ago when I was eating them. And now I'm sitting here talking, and all my body wants to do again, because remember, I'm the son of a type 2 diabetic who's the son of a type 2 diabetic. I quite literally crave this for the cellular level. So the saliva in my mouth made that difficult, but I pushed through for you guys.
You're an absolute legend of the highest order. We appreciate the time, as always, and we look forward to catching up with you again, man. Oh, and happy Halloween week. I know it's a big one for you guys in the Golic family.
Absolutely. I got my Pop-Tart costume all ready to go in honor of the Pop-Tart Bowl. So hell, we'll be representing loud and proud on this high holiday. Appreciate it, fellas.
Outstanding. We'll see you next time. All right, there he goes. Mike Golic Jr., ladies and gentlemen, here. And always a wealth of football knowledge.
Those amazing
things. How good do those things look, Walt?
They look fantastic. I mean, those little pumpkin
Trader
spice.
Joe's has got, they've got all
is
kinds
that your
of,
spot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
My mom, my 81-year-old mom, that is her favorite place to shop, and she's turned me on to that. And they've got all kinds of stuff. They got samples you can kind of go through there.
See, I love that. Every grocery store needs to have the sample spots.
They have orange chicken that is incredible. They have, I mean, all kinds of stuff. You can walk through the aisles and you're just like going, yeah, I need that. An impulse buy.
Yeah.
And but it's all reasonably priced too. It's not, when you get done, you feel like, well, I
didn't get
just
totally.
That. Yeah. But you feel, and when you get it back to the, back home, the quality of it is, he's absolutely right. It's a lot of great care goes into their product.
Well, these JoJo's pumpkin sandwich cookies, they're passing the eye test. They look delicious. I'll tell you that. They look good. All right, speaking of looking good, it's a TD Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen. The best touchdowns from the college football and NFL weekend. Plus, breaking news, NFL trade just went down. We'll tell you about it next right here on The Fan.